The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord Christ.
When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" He said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Now while the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them this question, "What do you think of the Messiah? Whose son is he?" They said to him, "The son of David." He said to them, "How is it then that David by the Spirit calls him Lord, saying, 'The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet'? If David thus calls him Lord, how can he be his son?" No one was able to give him an answer, nor from that day did anyone dare to ask him any more questions. The Gospel of the Lord.
In the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. Please be seated. Grace and peace to you and to all of our friends who are at the golf cart parade. Matt Gunter is a friend of mine and a former colleague in the Diocese of Chicago, where he was the rector of St. Barnabas in Glen Ellen, and I was the rector of Transfiguration in Palos Park. He's subsequently become the bishop of the Diocese of Fond du Lac in Wisconsin. But back when he and I were priests together in Chicago, I went to an installation ceremony for still another colleague, and Matt was preaching. He told a story about being a child on a farm. I think I've shared it with you before, where they, being boys of about 12 years, did what boys do and found ways to get into trouble. They played with the electric fence, because on a farm, what are you gonna play with? The most dangerous thing you can find, the electric fence. It's there to keep the cows in. The way it works is you have a power source. You run a wire, a bare wire, along insulated posts around the perimeter you want to enclose. It's nothing that could physically keep cows in. They would just run right through it if that's all there were. But every few seconds, a charge develops at one end of the wire, and it releases into the wire, and any poor cow who has the misfortune of pressing against the fence at that moment will be reminded that perhaps he would be more comfortable further back from the fence. Well, you can imagine what boys do. They play a version of Russian roulette. They go out and figure out if they at first can just reach over and touch the fence at the moment when it's not electrified, because you can't tell. The only way to tell if it's electrified is to close the circuit by touching it. And then these boys, of course, as you can imagine, found more and more creative ways of closing that circuit that I will not share with you. Except to say that somehow he was able to tell this story, and he's still the Bishop of Fond du Lac. I don't know. But his point was simply this: the system doesn't work unless the circuit is closed. The system doesn't work unless the circuit is closed. That is to say, the wire has to run continuously from the source. It is not enough that the fence right in front of you looks okay. You have to be in contact with the wire for it to work. And the wire has to be unbroken all the way back to the source. And his point and mine, the reason I bring it up in sharing it with you, is that the church and the gospel message that we have received from people before us are a lot like that. The gospel is invisible. The gospel is electric. The gospel gives power and guidance and reins us in. But it also lights us up. But it only works when the circuit is closed. It only works when we're engaged, when we're touching that live wire of the gospel ourselves. And it only works when there is an unbroken wire heading back through time, through the tradition of the church. Because what we do here on Sunday mornings, we didn't just make up. We received the tradition of the church. With all of its faults, with all of its errors along the way, with all of its problems comes centuries of wisdom, centuries of the Spirit of God intervening in the lives of people in substantive ways so that they were able to discern that God was acting, this God who is invisible and hard to pin down and figure out what God is up to. One of the only ways we can do that, one of the only ways we can figure it out is to watch how God has intersected with the lives of people across a tradition that extends unbroken from the pews we sit in today all the way back to the time of Christ. Now, if you know history at all, you know that there are times when that line may have been flourishing and times when that line may have been struggling. But the point is this. We have a received tradition, and what we think we know about God comes from our ability to receive it from people who received that charge, that live wire, a long time ago and passed it along. And it is critical that we touch it, that we engage it, because we're not going to feel that current until we do. And it is critical that as stewards of what we have received, that we lengthen that wire as the church today by what we've come to know, by what we have. We are the tradition of the church in our time. And the way that God is revealing things to us in our time is now part of the tradition that will be received by others who have not even been born yet. If we keep that wire connected. And if we don't, that wire will have extended across time and space here to the desert, across 2,000 years, and stop here. And the gospel will not be known to a generation beyond us. And the stakes, quite frankly, are high, and they're very personal to you and to me. Look around you and tell me how many young people you see in this room. I brought my children here. And I've long time ago, I gave up my prior practice of telling stories about my children in sermons because I know it embarrasses them. And I would not mention this to you today about Bob because it would embarrass him, and I hope you won't repeat it to him. But I'm serious. It's not a funny story. It's a sad story. Bob is my son, and I love him. And Bob asked his mother the other day, who is Judas? Because he didn't know. He's 16 years old, and he doesn't know who Judas is. It's just one of the more fundamental parts of our story. It's a basic part of who we are. Now, I know who Judas is because I grew up in a church that taught me who Judas is. You taught me a whole lot about our own tradition, about our own history, and who we are as a people. That's how I know. And my son didn't know. And it breaks my heart. Because if the priest kid doesn't know, then all the kids out there that you see every day don't have any idea who they are and what they've inherited by virtue of the person of Jesus Christ. And that scares me. I want to talk to you today about stewardship and continue a conversation that we began last week. Not by trying to scare you, but rather by talking to you about what's possible, what is in front of us. But it's also a sober conversation because there are some serious challenges to us that we need to deal with, and we need to figure out what we're going to do about it. I came here 4.5 years ago. I came in the summer of 2010. I inherited vital ministry and vital ministers. You are great and faithful leaders. I also inherited ministers who were tired. And many of you who were in leadership roles when I arrived have handed those off because you were exhausted. And I understand. I inherited excellent worship and I inherited excellent music. And we still have it, though we have put every possible barrier in front of it to make it as hard to do as possible. I inherited a tradition of tremendous interim leadership from my previous predecessors, from Roger Douglas, and from George Martin, who had been here as faithful interims before I came and did great work and did hard work, things that I inherited and I'm grateful for. And I received that tradition. I received that live wire. I inherited a wounded staff. I inherited a staff that weren't sure entirely what their roles were because everything had changed. About half of the office had been laid off before I got here, and they were all in roles that they didn't really completely understand and to this day are still kind of evolving. I inherited Cellar Door, our main fundraiser for outreach that was losing $140,000 a year. And the proceeds from that were what we were going to use for outreach. Instead, we were paying $140,000 in to keep it afloat. We had a lease that was coming due, and we had to figure out what to do about it. Were we going to sign on for 5 more years under a business model that we saw eroding? Concluded that we could not and closed that. Inherited a school that was losing $300,000, that lost $300,000 in the last year that it operated and was forecasted to lose $350,000 the next year. And I worked with the vestry, and through their leadership, they made a very hard choice to close grades K through 8, and that was gut-wrenching. Since I have been at St. Margaret's, I have laid off 29 staff members. 29 staff members, most associated with the school, some associated with the cellar door, and some associated with our office and the core of our operation. There are a lot of challenges here. The church as a whole is changing. The role of Christendom, that is the churchy way of saying kind of the church is this powerful institution that would be on every corner and that the culture would listen to, and you'd have a clergy person on an ethics board at a hospital or something because people cared what the institutional church was talking about. There was a time when the New York Times ran the sermons of the leading congregations in New York. There was a time when the culture was far more integrated with the church. That Christendom has crumbled away, and we are on the side of the road and marginal to the culture, fighting for our voice in it. That's the whole church, not just St. Margaret's. I inherited here at St. Margaret's a tradition of a very wealthy base, mostly centered around a handful of tremendously wealthy and well-known leaders who were either dying or moving away for the final phase of their lives. And as you know, those people are extremely difficult to replace. We've got lots of new people who have arrived in their places, but none of them are named Firestone. And none of them are named Annenberg, and none of them are named Train and names like that. I love the people who are here, don't get me wrong. What I'm saying is that St. Margaret's grew to be what it was because we had people in the congregation who could write the kind of checks that could build a building like this. Could you imagine trying to do this today? I inherited crushing debt that we still have. We still have almost $1.8 million in debt, so that when you put money in the plate, $175,000 of that does not support ministry at all. It just pays the bills for debt that was amassed over a period of years, not building this building, not building the organ, not building anything, just running operating losses. And we're paying it today. It's not fair and it's not right, but it's the hurdle that we have to overcome so that the next money that comes on the plate can actually do ministry. I inherited a building. Look around you. Look at these windows. These are, with a couple of exceptions, plain glass windows. And this building, in the middle of the summer, when it's 120 degrees outside and the sun is in the southern sky, has to be kept at a constant temperature year-round to preserve the organ and the building itself, which would otherwise fail completely. So I inherited an electric bill of over $100,000 a year just to sustain the climate in this room. And as those of you who are fanning yourselves or those of you who are putting on sweaters right now know, it is difficult to maintain a stable environment in this room. I inherited enormous deferred maintenance. If your kneeler doesn't work, or if you found that you trip constantly over the broken concrete or over the broken asphalt out in the parking lot, or try to come here at night and can't get anywhere because the lights don't work, it's because maintenance has been deferred here for decades. And I inherited an organization that does not serve families like mine. And it doesn't serve grandchildren like yours. And my fear is that that wire came halfway around the world and two millennia, and that we need to be careful that it doesn't stop here. And we have work to do. The good news is that we have opportunities, because God has given us enormous gifts in this place, starting with you. I have never in my life, and I have been to some wonderful Episcopal churches, I have never in my life encountered people with the spirit and the heart and the know-how and the intellect and the love and the capability that you have for leadership in this church. I know you love this church, and I do too. I said at 8 o'clock, and I'll repeat today, I'll repeat again. I feel sometimes like when I came here as your rector, you gave me a member of your family. You gave me one of your children to care for. And you trusted me with something that is huge and so important. And what I'm here to tell you is your child is starving. And I really need your help. I need your help desperately because I love who you are and what St. Margaret's is, and I want it to continue. And I do put my money where my mouth is. Becky and I have tithed since we've been here, and we increase our giving every year. Our vestry has increased its giving by 44% this year. I need your help. In addition to great leadership here, and trust me, there are, I also inherited a tradition of great music and worship, and that trend continues. I inherited strong parish leadership with great imagination, strong outreach efforts. So when we closed the cellar door, it meant the blossoming of the St. Margaret's Outreach Center and of Read With Me and other outreach efforts that are changing the valley. We have inherited great gifts. And I inherited an assumption, a working assumption among you and the members of this committee, that the people of the Coachella Valley actually look to St. Margaret's for leadership on important issues. They actually still, even with the death of Christendom just about everywhere else, people here care what St. Margaret's has to say. And when I meet people outside of the parish, they want to know what St. Margaret's is up to because they believe that we are a leading voice in our community. And that's important to me, and I want to honor that, and I want us to step up to the plate on that. At the beginning of 2013, we were faced with a really compressed budget. Giving was down, pledging was down, and expenses were up. We made major cuts. We cut our paid singers in half. We cut music at the 8 o'clock service, and there was a huge hue and cry from people who thought that was outrageous, and two of them offered to underwrite it personally, and they did, and that ran out sometime in 2013, and we've continued it by making cuts elsewhere. We cut our breakfast programs that for a number of people who used to come to St. Margaret's, that's how they ate on Sundays, because we were feeding people and growing our congregation by doing the most basic thing that Jesus did, feeding the sheep. But we cut it because we couldn't afford it. We fired the person who was doing our newsletter and cut the newsletter. And we cut back substantially on our printed products and the things that were part of our evangelism. That probably needed to change in some ways anyway, but it's a cut that we feel desperately. That was at the beginning of 2013. Then at the beginning of 2014, as we were saying goodbye to Troy, when I went back to look at how it was going with the budget effort, we saw that, again, the combination of lost income and increased expenses meant that we were down over $100,000, which is why we didn't replace Troy. We didn't officially cut the position. We just said we couldn't fund it yet until we raised the money, and we set ourselves to raising the money, to closing a gap that was more than $100,000. And I took a deep breath and I said, well, I didn't have an associate the first year I was here. I can stick it out. I can make it through. We will survive this and we'll go get the money. The vestry put together a committee to raise the money. The committee met with me on a weekly basis and I set up a plan to go get the money. And I met with the members of the committee who asked me every week what I was going to be doing this week to raise the money, in addition to Troy's job and my job. And then I organized a bunch of events, and I went and I talked to people about St. Margaret's and its mission, and I got slapped on the back a lot and told that I was doing a great job and that you're behind me 100%. And we got pledges amounting to about $20,000 to $25,000 that have not been fulfilled, I assume because the people who made the pledges assumed that they would make the money when we actually hired an associate, but we haven't been able to do that because I don't know how to pay for the other 80% of it. And in that same period, actual giving has gone down by about $25,000 relative to what we expected it to be based on pledges. So the compression continues. It is a very, very difficult challenge that we are facing. What would we do if we had the money? What would we do? And this is the important part, because I can sit here and like talk about the problem all day long, but I want to talk about the opportunity. What could St. Margaret's do if we had fully funded ministries? Well, first of all, and this may seem like just kind of padding our own, feathering our own nests, if you will, the first thing I would do is make sure that we were paying a decent wage to our hard-working and thinly stretched existing staff. During my time as rector, they have received 1.3% across-the-board increase one time. Prior to my arriving, the last time they got an across-the-board increase was 5 years. So in 9 years, they have received 1.3% increase. So the first thing I would do is take care of my staff who work like dogs, and they pour their hearts out because they love you the way I do. And I'm proud of them, every one of them. And I'd pay them what they're worth, which is considerably more than they're getting paid now. And I would make sure that they had a career path and opportunities right here so that they weren't using this as a position from which to say, where can I go when the jobs are available? But beyond that, in terms of growing this congregation, I would build on the hard work that Rita Sari and others put together around our discernment effort in the wintertime, where they discerned that God was calling us to be people of justice and compassion. And I believe, for reasons I've articulated before, that we were actually hearing God's call on that. And I would move on it. And we are moving on it. And to people who would say, oh, they do these study groups all the time, but nothing ever comes of it, we are building our budget this year. We are building our campaign. We are building the work of the vestry around the results of this discernment effort, listening carefully for the voice of God and responding to it. So I would start with justice and compassion. I would expand our outreach offerings. We have an outreach center, and it's open 2 days a week. It only gives away food and clothing and other services one day a week because that's all the food and clothing that we have. And that's all the volunteer management that we can do. It's a huge effort. If you've worked there, it's a lot of work for the people who are in there. And I'm so proud of the work they do. Then on Thursdays, we operate it another day, and we do work that's mostly centered around the spiritual needs of members of the congregate, of that congregation who come, and that is their church home. We're actually operating a satellite church, you probably didn't know it, over at our outreach center, because one day a week on Thursdays, that's church for a lot of people in the community who come together in that place. I would expand that. I would expand and engage the community better by expanding our St. Margaret's Forum so that we have conversations with our community and leaders on a regular basis, so that real decisions about how we're going to live our lives are made here at St. Margaret's where they ought to be. I would expand programs of community organizing and activism like are being developed by the same people leading both the St. Margaret's Forum and our Compassion and Justice Ministries. I would build on the great work already started and being slowly eroded right now around our music program by expanding both our internal and our external offerings. Internally, I would offer, frankly, more services of worship, because when we get, we're kind of empty today because of the, no disrespect intended to those of you who are here. I don't mean to say that there's no one here. There are fewer people here than I might otherwise have expected. Because we're competing with another event, but in high season, this place is packed, and there are people who drive away because there's no place to park. I would offer more and more varied modes of worship, because I love the way we do worship here, but it doesn't speak to everybody. It doesn't speak to a community, and we have the capability to do worship and music well, and to offer more and varied modes of worship and music, and of instrumentation, and strong professional leadership to supplement the strengths we already have with our fine music leaders, with additional voices and directors like we once had. Externally, I would not just add more performances. That would be nice, but we're at the heart not about a performing arts center, but we are about building up our community. And one, just to give you an example, last year when Chanticleer was here, they were talking about the programs that they offer in addition to going around doing concerts. And they said that they go to various places around the state of California and offer these multi-day workshops where people come in and study and train in music under the direction of the leaders of Chanticleer. And they do this in cities all over California. And it sounded incredibly exciting. And I thought, something like that here would be amazing. I asked the head of Chanticleer, what do you do in the middle of the winter when it's really cold? And people don't want to go to these retreat centers because it's just not comfortable. And he said, well, we don't do them then because the weather's so terrible. And I said, well, not here. This is Palm Springs. People come from all over the country to be here in the worst times of year because it's great here. What if you offered something here? And he was all over it. And we talked about it. We don't have the resources to pull it off. We have the space, we got the place, we got the organ, we got everything we need to teach people incredible music and to teach people down valley who know nothing of music because their school programs have cut everything related to the fine arts. We have, in my dreams, the capacity to teach music to people who otherwise have no access to it because we have brilliant, gifted musicians here who can teach, and we have the space to do it. That's my dream for this place, one of them. We need, desperately, a second priest. I'll tell you the truth, we need, desperately, a third priest. Not because, oh, we're St. Margaret's, we should have a lot of priests, but rather because of the ministries that are enabled when you have a good professional team operating the place. I've said it before, I'll say it again, we are not a one-priest congregation, but we will become one if we operate as a one-priest congregation. Remember when I used to greet you out on the steps? I can't do that anymore. I was running around this morning because we had a number of logistical problems and things that I had to take care of, and I'm the only priest. Troy and I used to divide that work out. When Brian was here, we divided it out three ways. One of us would do logistics, one would greet you, one would go pursue pastoral projects that where we knew we had particular people in particular need. That needs to happen because it's what we're here for. It's a crying shame that I'm not greeting you. I walked past a person, and it broke my heart as I walked past a person running back to the office to pick up some documents this morning, and a man on the labyrinth was approaching me and trying to talk to me about a family member who was hospitalized. And I'm going to be honest with you, I was dodging him. I was dodging him because I was in a hurry trying to get back to the office to pick up some materials I had left, because there's only one of us. We can do better. I need to share the management and the pastoral care of this large and complex operation with professional colleagues. I need help with the oversight and the expansion of worship offerings that we can and should do. I need help from professional clergy with ministry development. That's you. That's equipping the saints, training the enormously talented people here how to do ministry effectively. That by itself is a huge job and a critical one. I need a professional priest to help me evangelize a community who knows nothing about God, who knows less than my son about the tradition of the church. I need a priest to help me in that work. I need a priest, and I can't tell you what a godsend Steve Smith and our pastoral care team are. They are a blessing to this whole congregation, and I'm so proud of the work they do. And I need a priest to work with them, because some of the work that they do requires that a priest be present. When I came in this morning to do some work, I came in very early this morning, there was a voicemail waiting for me, and it was a desperate person, the daughter of a longtime member of this congregation, who was in tears and at her wit's end because she's been trying to reach a priest here, she says, for days and hasn't been able to get a message through. Can someone please, please help me? She said, I am desperate. Will you please have a priest call me? And it was the first I'd heard of it. I need help. I need help, and you need help. And this congregation needs good clergy leadership. We have a part-time facilities manager, Alan Arch, who had in 1 month this summer made back his entire salary by improving, and I know you're tired of me talking about it, by improving the efficiency of our air conditioner. He got his entire salary by making improvements to the way we air condition this building. But that's a full-time job. Full-time. If you've walked around here and shaking your head, wondering why the fountain is overflowing again, wondered why things are falling apart again, it's because there's nobody minding the store. We need a full-time facilities manager for this facility so that we can do ministry here. And I need a full-time communications director. People tell me all the time, I don't know what's going on at St. Margaret's. I need a full-time communications director. There are untapped possibilities here around family ministry and real evangelism. I want to just share a couple of basic facts, and I know I'm going over. And I apologize for that. I do respect your time. This is important to say. I want to make sure that you know about some of the things that are true about the way we operate here. First of all, and someone just asked me about this recently, there's a mixed message out there because we're saying on the one hand that we're living within our means, we're paying our bills, the books are balanced, and that's true. We are not adding to that $1.8 million in debt because we live within our means. And part of what I have to live with is paying $175,000 mostly in interest every year on the bills racked up before I even got here. It's not fair. Not fair to me. It's not fair to you. It's $175,000 worth of ministry that isn't happening because we're carrying that debt. But I'm not adding to that debt. We are paying our bills. So in that sense, if someone tells you, yes, St. Margaret's is financially on solid ground, that is true. Here's how we got on the solid ground. We cut vital ministries. We cut things that are at the core. Do you know who's in charge of Christian education and formation? Forget kids. For adults, do you know who's in charge of teaching you the faith and helping you form your ideas for how we are Christians in the world? Nobody. Because we cut the position that used to do that. That's how we're balancing our books. We have, in this diocese, it may surprise you to learn, in this diocese, the problem is not that you're not generous, because you are. We have the highest income of any congregation in this diocese already. and we have the highest expense. People will say to me sometimes, my personal pledge doesn't really matter. I'll tell you why it does. Because the infrastructure costs that I inherited when I got here are so massive that if this is what it takes to run St. Margaret's, this is what I have no control over. So what I have control over, and you're adding to and reducing your pledge, is a space about this size. So you're thinking, understandably, what does my pledge mean in a pool that is this big? And what I'm seeing is, your pledge means a great deal in a pool that is this big. Because that's what I can actually make decisions about how we're going to do ministry here at St. Margaret's. That's where I have discretion. I need you to know that. I need you to know that important things like St. Margaret's Day next week, like Christmas, like Easter, none of those things are in our budget. They haven't been. The whole time I've been here, it's never been in the budget. We always fund those things by going after generous donors, and we always find generous donors, and we'll say more about it next week who those donors are, to thank them for the great work they're doing. But it's not part of our budget. And the other thing I need you to know is that the good, well, never mind, I already said that one. I want to tell you that we're doing our stewardship campaign this year and every year because we believe that God has given us enormous resource and enormous possibility to go out and change the world. I believe in you. I believe in St. Margaret's. I believe it's important, and I invite you to share in that important ministry so that that charge carries on way beyond you and me, and that people who make contact reaching for the divine spark of God can always find it here. Amen.